Welcome back, Raw Thoughts listeners, to another episode with me, Mackenzie Tiggs. Today, I have Paula with Idaho Cobs. She is actually a trauma therapist, does a lot with sex trafficking, and I am so excited to have you on, Paula.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yes, absolutely. So I want to dive into what your background is and kind of where you are right now with it.
Great. So I have been a trauma therapist for 20 plus years. I've owned and operated my own community mental health agency for 12 to 13 years there, where I had 9 different locations here in Idaho. And during that time, I had started to see a lot of maladaptive sexual behavior happening more and more, and kind of started to learn about domestic trafficking. And so I kind of forced both of my skill sets together and started a nonprofit. And so even with the nonprofit, I still do trauma therapy.
Wow. And what is your actual nonprofit for?
So my nonprofit's Idaho Cobs, and it's Community Outreach Behavioral Services. And we provide resources for victims and survivors of sex trafficking.
And I know I had already asked you before we recorded, but I want the listeners to hear this. In Idaho, how often are you seeing the sex trafficking?
Oh, gosh, I am meeting 4 to 6 new victims per week. Mm-hmm. Victims and survivors that I've never met before. Per week. It is happening in every single hotel here in our area. Went from the I-84 to the Grove. It's happening everywhere. There's nobody that's exempt from being a victim of trafficking.
Wow. How did they get into that situation, I'm going to say? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, so we could talk about this all day long, but just in a nutshell, it's vulnerabilities. Every single victim that I've ever come in contact with has some level of vulnerability, whether it's homelessness, whether it's addiction, whether it's abuse, physical, sexual, emotional abuse as a child, whether it's partners, whether it's, you know, there's so many different things.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And how are they able to find you?
So that's a really good question as well. I've been doing this long enough now where I have a lot of amazing partners, all the law enforcement, probation and parole. I have school contacts, health and welfare. I go into the jails weekly and the detention centers. And so I just give them hope. What's called an NGO, a non-governmental organization. So I'm not the cops. I'm not the popos. I'm not anybody that's going to hurt them or take their children. So I'm a neutral person that they find that. One of the really interesting things that I will tell you is 99% of the victims and survivors that I work with don't realize it. They don't realize that they're victims of sex trafficking. That comes through our education.
Wow. And what is it that they maybe don't realize that they're in that realm?
Most of it is because our society is so quick to call everybody a prostitute. That's prostitution. You're just a prostitute. And there's a very, very specific difference. So what they have to understand is if somebody's making any money off of them, whether it's financial gain, food, rent, whatever, they are a victim. If they're independent and they have any kind of sexual act for money and they keep every cent, then they're an independent prostitution. But once somebody gains from them, they become a victim of trafficking. And that sometimes is so hard for them to wrap their brain around. But once they're clean and sober, once they're safe in a safe space, which we provide, then they start to understand, wow, somebody took advantage of me.
Yeah, I think that's a huge cue right there where somebody took advantage of me.
Absolutely. Exploitation. And not just in children, in adults as well.
Yeah. I'm curious of that. I mean, what are kind of your ranges? I know there's so many different variables, right? And this is hard to even ask this question because I know the answer can be very complex. But what maybe age range are you seeing this more prevalent in? Because I think when we do think of sex trafficking, we do think of those younger children getting taken, kidnapped. Now they're in the sex ring, right? Like that's kind of a narrative that some of us already have in our brains. But like what is actually happening?
So really what's happening is Idaho's number one trafficking population is familial. We're selling our own children. We're selling our own husbands and wives. We're selling our own sibling sets. So what that looks like is we have children as young as 6, 7, 8 that we know are being trafficked, clear up until ages of 50 to 60 years old.
Whoa.
And all ethnicities, there's nobody exempt. They're not like when we think of trafficking, we think it's international. It is our own Idahoans selling our own Idahoans. For the most part, sometimes we'll have some that'll come through a trafficking belt. But for the most part, we're selling our own people.
Wow. That's heartbreaking to hear.
Yes.
And we had talked also, and I want the listeners to hear this, what you were talking about of when we don't see it, we don't have to recognize it, and we don't have to acknowledge it. I want you to kind of go into that.
Yes, absolutely. That is the biggest barrier here in Idaho. If we don't see it, if we don't acknowledge it exists, then we don't have to deal with it. If we turn a blind eye, then we can act like we didn't see it, right? And so because it's such a dirty, you know, dark secret and topic that we talk about, if I can turn my head and not acknowledge it, I don't have to be accountable. I don't have to be responsible, even if it's happening in my own backyard.
Do you think it's the awareness piece, or do you think it's people that maybe know, but they don't know what to do about it?
I think it's twofold. I think it's absolutely, it's an awareness. And if I do know, then what am I going to do? Because really, up until, you know, there's a couple of organizations, not many, and there's none that do what we do. And so without Idaho Cobs coming to the table, when you have victims and you have survivors, most people, even law enforcement, what do we do with them, right? We've ran into that so many times, which is why it's been so crucial for my relationship building with all the law enforcement, because they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And I've had victims and survivors when that I've met with law enforcement with them together, they've looked at them and said, you saw me day after day, but you didn't do anything.
Wow.
And so that was very educational for our law enforcement partners as well.
Absolutely. That's actually really, that's really just bold right there, right? For them to also say that, but also for our officers that sometimes don't know what to do either. And I think we hold them to such a high standard, but it's like they're humans as well. And we don't have all of those resources. Like, I think the best thing that first responders have on their side is that they're really great problem solvers. Like,
yes.
I may not know what to do, but here are all of the other things. So maybe, you know, somebody knows that they are getting trafficked. What's the next steps to coming to you? Like, how do they get that? Maybe they have the awareness, they know somebody, and then how do you come
Just in? Call me. Just call me. I'm always open to give my phone number out there. Everybody has my phone number. That's what I do, is just give me a call. We will hook up. I have a whole team. I have a whole crisis team that's amazing. And I'm connected to everybody else that can help get them those resources. So I will tell you that law enforcement has just moved mountains in the last few years on becoming educated on trafficking, stepping up and identifying people in each one of their departments, and then connecting with us. We have an amazing task force.
And is it you going in there and teaching them this, or how are they getting that education?
I think both. I've done a lot of law enforcement. I have an actual detective that I partner with, that we go all over the state and even outside of the state and train law enforcement entities, because they need to see what the NGO, what the non-governmental organization can do. And they also need to hear it from another cop on this is how we work together to at least address it.
Yeah. And I want to kind of transfer into this topic, because you doing trauma therapy,
yes,
you're working around not only the victims, but you're also working around these first responders.
Yes.
How is that? Like, what are you seeing that these first responders, you know what they see, you know what they deal with, even just in the trafficking. How are you able to help as a trauma therapist for them?
I think probably the biggest thing that I bring to the table for them is being present, being understanding of, now I've not seen everything they've seen. I've not been where they've been, but I get the level of trauma. And as a trauma therapist who's experienced and who's worked a number of years, I can be there with them. And then we start. It's very difficult to jump right in and start with the trauma therapy, with the EMDRs or the ARTs, unless you have that connect.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have that connect, and the first responder has to be ready and they have to be comfortable.
Yes.
Same thing with our victims and survivors. They have to be ready and they have to feel safe.
Yes. Yes. How do we get them to that point?
Get the victims and the first responders, or all of them?
I think all
of
them.
How do we
them.
Get them? Being present. And it's an unfortunate reality, and I see this every day in the trafficking arena. When they're not ready, they go back out. Mm-hmm. So the typical female male will go out 5 to 7 times in their life because they think they're ready, and they're just not quite there yet. Same thing with first responders. They're not always ready.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, it takes some really bad things happening in their personal life to make that happen.
Yes, which is terrible.
It's terrible.
Right? It's terrible, and I've seen, you know, that happen in so many different realms, so many different stories, you know, but it comes down to like the behaviors that are happening that then now you can kind of dive a little bit deeper into.
Right. And I think it's a stigma as well. So first responders have a whole different type of stigma, but it's there. Yep. If you get help, you're weak. Same thing in the trafficking arena. If these girls and boys go out and get help, they're in trouble. Mm. So the stigmas, there's still stigma. It just looks a little bit different, but definitely on the first responders, there's levels of stigma that are brutal to get through.
Yes.
Even as a provider, when I see first responders and we start to work through that and we start to kind of maybe get to a little spot, they may like bounce and not come back for 2 or 3 months.
Wow. How do you handle that on your personal side?
On my personal side, I think it's just a God-given gift. I think it's just my jam. It's my thing.
Yeah. And what about, you know, because I know a lot of times first responders don't want to go, you know, and talk to somebody like you because they're going to scare them or they're going to, you know, frighten them of what they do talk about. But how do you decompress as a therapist after hearing these things that they're talking to you about?
So therapists have therapists. And sometimes it's just a circle of friendly therapists that we are able to staff together, not given information, but just to be able to do that. But I learned a long time ago, therapists need therapists.
We all do. We need coaches. Yes, you know, coaches need coaches. That's mentors need mentors. Exactly. Therapists need therapists. Yeah. Like
sometimes it's maybe over a glass of wine, but it, you know, therapists need therapists.
Yeah. And I want to talk, you know, a little bit about, and maybe this will come up again, about the burnout.
Oh, yes.
Right? There's so much of you even just describing this where it's like, I'm exhausted just hearing it.
So burnout is a very interesting topic because it all goes together, whether you're working with victims, whether you're working with first responders, whether you're just working with the general population. Burnout happens when we don't take care of us. Mm. Burnout happens when we think that we can hold so many plates in the air spinning and we do really nice for a bit and it looks really catchy. But at some point, one hand is going to slow down. Mm. And then when that starts to happen in our professional life, then by the time we realize it, we're on the bottom floor. Everything is crushed around us. And so we really need to address it and we really need to understand and acknowledge and say, I think I'm burned out. I think I'm feeling kind of tired. I think life kind of sucks right now. And I've got to figure out why, instead of adding more to my plate, I need to really look at my plate.
Mm, I like that, because so many people, when they get overwhelmed, like in their mind, they want to put that energy into another task.
Oh, absolutely. We are a society to run and gun. We are a society to multitask. And if we don't, what happens? We're looked at different. Mm-hmm. Or we think we're looked at different. Yeah. Or we think if we don't accomplish this, I'm a failure. And then we're dealing with self-confidence. A lot of self-confidence issues come within that burnout arena.
So how are we, or how are you, one, getting that awareness of burnout, but also giving people, I think with awareness, there always has to be like a how-to as well, right? Like one, absolutely, you got to recognize it. How do people themselves have the awareness to be like, that's me. I'm the one that's burnt out.
I think it's really important for us to do inventories, personal inventories, daily, weekly, monthly, whatever works for you. I'm a terrible organizer, so mine has to be monthly. But just write down everything that you do. Write down everything that you do. Identify that so that you, and say it out loud to yourself so your ears can hear you saying the things that you're doing. When you get to that list and you go through that list and something doesn't feel right, look at it. Mm. Look at it. It might be something hard that you may either have to give up, alter the time, or do something different. Maybe that's even increasing your self-care. But look at that list of stuff that you're doing. That's how we start to identify, oh, wow, this is a lot, right? When I only have this much time per week, per day, per hour available, and I'm trying to stick all of this in, no wonder I'm feeling tired, or no wonder I'm comfort eating, or no wonder that I'm, you know, I've stopped exercising, or I exercise excessively, which then starts that cycle again.
Yeah. And I think that's so, so crucial, because I know for myself, and this is something I just kind of like started doing in my own mental brain, but also putting it on paper, which I think there's something so powerful of having it on paper where you can visually see it. Because if it's not, then it just kind of is a thought. Then
absolutely,
we get busy with something else, right? And then it's kind of out. But kind of like, what is giving me energy and what is sucking out my energy? And just putting them into those two categories can really help you understand, like you're talking about that inventory list, right? It's like, what is actually fueling me and what is draining me? And that right there, you can see, okay, well, like you said, maybe I need to change my time on this, or maybe I need to give this up.
Yeah.
And I know I recently did that with working on the ambulance, actually. I was like, I felt guilty, you know, we're really short staffed. I was giving more time. And finally, I was like, the podcast is, you know, kind of lacking. My personal life is lacking. I'm trying to do too many things. Where do my gifts lie? Right? And these are all really hard conversations to have with yourself.
Absolutely. I like the idea of putting it on paper, because I'm a big person. I'm a big advocate for using all of our senses. So when we're doing trauma therapy and trauma care, even in our own self-care, use your senses, use your smell, use your taste, use your touch, use your hearing, use it all. Excuse me. Sorry. Because it's very important, because that is what holds in our body. That is what's so important to then identify, what do we need to sacrifice? Life is about sacrifice. I mean, we all sacrifice every day something.
Yeah, absolutely. So you talk about this inventory list, you talk about this awareness, you know, what are how-tos for people to, you know, take that inventory and do something about it?
So once you take the inventory on paper, on whatever, because our electronics have distracted us so much, we forget some of the senses. But once you're to that point, then look at what you're willing to do. Like, okay, so I see I've got 12 things on my list. I seriously can only do 8. So at that point, I have to decide which 4 I need to sacrifice. And then I need to add something else in there. Do I need to add in that time frame self-care? Something positive? Maybe something that I like to do, which is all self-care, but people don't understand that. Mm-hmm. They think self-care has got to be a massage. It's got to be, you know, therapy. It's got to be all these different things, when sometimes it's just, what do I like to do?
Yeah.
Do I like to take a hot bath? Do I like to go for a walk? But it has to be in that space. You have to make sure that you replace that, because then your list, your inventory list, is going to be fuller of good stuff.
Yes.
Versus the tiring stuff that makes us tired, that makes us grumpy, that makes us salty, all of those different things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love you talking about this, because to me, this is all a realm of your mental health.
Absolutely. It is all in the mental health. And our mental and physical health go hand in hand. They are intertwined in our body. You can't do one without the other. You can't have poor mental health and have good body. It just doesn't work that way. You can't have poor body and good mental health. You've got to have them very connected.
Yeah. And you talked about too, like, how simple self-care can be.
Yes, it can be simple. However, when we have our plate full, think about all those plates spinning in the air. To stop and take a bath seems impossible. To stop and take my dog for a walk seems impossible, because what's going to happen if I stop? I'm going to drop a plate. And then when one plate stops or drops, it's just a matter of time before they all come down. So then that reverts to back thinking of that one simple little self-care is just, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I love just your explanations of this, because like in my brain, I'm like, can't people understand this? You know?
Yes. We are an energy driven society, and it's very hard to stop and just be. One of the things that I tell every single one of the girls when they come in the house, I mean, here's victims and survivors taken out of trap houses that have been turning 5 to 20 tricks a day. And I want them to just be. And they're like, what the hell?
You're good.
What the heck? What is going on here? You want me to just be? We start to teach them that they just need to learn to just be. First responders too. Mm-hmm. How many first responders do you know that can just be?
Oh, right? Very minimal.
Very minimal.
Because I already know what they do is they sit in their room, and so many of them have explained this as well. When it is to be, it means to pause, right? And just be there, which then what happens, right? Their minds.
Exactly.
Their minds just continue to go and go and go and go. And our brains are so hardwired for negativity that's what they default to.
Right. They need to learn some good grounding techniques. Grounding is amazing with burnout, because we do that. We all do that, whether it's first responders and our victims and survivors. Because if they sit and be, what are they thinking of? I have to think about all those men that touched me and all those men that do. And they've told me that. All the information we have are from our victims. And so we teach them grounding techniques. Do some with your fingers, touch, grab a rock, put it in your hand, put it in your mouth if you need to, because you're, again, you're using those senses. And the more senses that you use on the outside of your body, the less your hamster wheel is going to keep running. Because the hamster's got to get off to think about all these other things you're doing.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's simple, but it's so difficult in a very busy brain.
Yeah. And I think people have just not been taught that, the intentionality behind it.
Absolutely.
Where it's like, what do you mean ground myself, you know? And it's like, our five senses are so critical. And it also, I think when you say to be, in my mind, it really means to be present.
Yes.
And to be present in the now means that we are touching something, we are smelling something. That's
tasting.
How you, yeah, tasting. That's how you stop that loop going in your brain, which is that hamster on the wheel, right? You get them off, you stop it.
That's right.
And then now you're cognizant and being like, oh, what am I thinking? Mm-hmm. What am I grateful for today?
Right. Another big thing with burnout is we need to do more positive affirmations. When that hamster gets off the wheel and when I have those rocks in my hands or the oil or whatever, I love smell, I love oil, then what? Right? Okay, I need to think of not all the terrible things that I've experienced today, but hey, this is pretty good. I can smell this good air. I can taste something. I am a good person. A very, very difficult statement for 99.9% of our population or our community, mm-hmm. right? Because we're so caught up and on the negative stuff. And when you're a first responder and you see the negative stuff every day, I mean, y'all should have like a little training in your academies to go, let me look at the positive stuff because I have amazing gifts that I'm giving this community.
Yes.
And myself. I'm giving myself some really good gifts.
Yeah. And I love you saying that because that's where my passion I'm finding, right? When I was able to stop some of my plates spinning, mm-hmm. is like, that is my gift. Like yes. having that experience, being in the field, this is, you know, and we talked about it, like, this is why I'm stepping into the life coaching of first responders, because I understand what it's like in your brain, in your mind, in your partners, but it's that gratitude piece where it can be so simple. And I think we get a lot of humans, I don't think this is a title by any means, I think we get very salty and very bitter at, like, we need something in return for what we're giving.
Yes, 100%. And it goes right back to that simple thing. When you give a gift, there should be no expectation. You give the gift and you let it go. I mean, we teach children and adults that all the time. When they go, oh, I gave that person something and this is what they did with it, my response to them is, then you didn't give them a gift, right? Because a gift is unconditional. You give it, you let it go, and there's no expectations. Same thing with ourselves. Same thing with ourselves when we're out there in the world, in the working world. It goes so hand in hand with burnout because we hold on to all those expectations. That becomes pretty heavy.
Yeah. Do you think expectations can also kind of speed up the burnout because we are expecting to be at a certain place at an age or, you know, within our companies?
Well, and when we have those adrenaline rushes and we have all that cortisol, I mean, it's bad to have it all the time, right? And first responders have it all the time. And so when they have a crash down, they're really down because mm-hmm. their cortisol goes back to normal like everybody else's. But their expectations are, oh, no, wait, I got to go back up. And so they spend a lot of time up. Same thing with victims of sex trafficking. Their survival mechanism is it's always fight or flight, always fight or flight. Same thing with first responders, always fight or flight.
What about people that have corporate jobs? Maybe not this so high intensity careers, but where do you see their expectations and their burnouts with it as well?
So I think that is same level, but on a different arena because they have probably hundreds of people underneath them that are expected to perform, right? They're expected for some type of level of productivity. And when they don't, even at the higher corporate, they have somebody to answer to. When you have somebody to answer to, you always have that expectation. Somebody always wants something from you. Mm-hmm. And on a corporate level, it's hard to be friends with people underneath you. It's hard. I mean, those layers go down and down, and pretty soon you feel lots of isolation and lots of aloneness. You can come out and present as, look at me, look at me, look at this is who I am. But the inner side is very lonely.
Mm-hmm. And maybe you can speak on this of kind of like they do have to put different faces on, right? Oh. Or different masks of being the professional versus being just you. How does that like kind of headbutt each other with that inner world like you're talking about.
I think it's very similar in the corporate world because they have to be somebody, right? They have to be somebody, but at home they look different, which is a lot of the conflict between the couples. Same thing with first responders. They have to perform here. And when they get home, they have a typical significant other per se. Mm-hmm. And the same thing. Even in the trafficking arena, they have to perform, but when they're done, the trafficker expects something different. And so even up at the corporate level, that's very difficult because there you have those cortisol highs and you have the lows and you have the highs and you have the lows and you have all that expectation. And when you don't connect the body and the mind together in those situations, it becomes very, very conflictual, very volatile. Hence why you see a lot of volatile behavior in high corporate end, high first responder end, trafficking arena.
Yeah. How is it that you can bring those two things closer together in being more themselves at the job and at home so they don't have to kind of like flip the switch to what they're going to be expected
of? So one of those is trauma therapy. And through that is vulnerability. We have to, each person, whether we are on the first responder or the significant other, corporate executive or the significant other, is we have to understand and get them to a place where they recognize their own vulnerability. Mm-hmm. But we don't want to be vulnerable, right? Because if we're vulnerable, what that means, we're weak. Mm-hmm. So we have to have them identify that and accept it and be present there. And then we get to do the work.
Yeah. And I love teaching. I mean, in a lot of my listeners, you know, that have been around for how long I've been, but my big strive is that vulnerability actually brings us connections.
Absolutely. Yes.
I love that.
Spot
you.
Spot on.
Yes.
Yes.
I love that you.
Yes.
Like I'm on the right path. Yes. I'm on the right path.
We have to be vulnerable to be authentic. Mm-hmm. But the word vulnerable looks kind of yucky and it sounds kind of yucky. If you use the verbiage authentic, then people are like, oh, okay, it's kind of a bougie word.
Yeah.
But when you really use the word vulnerable, which all demographics understand, everybody understands that, then we're talking. Then that makes me too raw.
Yeah.
It makes me too open and it makes me susceptible for something coming in. Yep, you're right. All of those things are absolutely true. But it also opens the door to true healing.
Mm.
And that's where you have to go. And if they're not willing to sit in that spot for just a second, wide open, they're not going to get healed. If they stay long enough, they may end up with this other. And that's what we run into. But it is true vulnerability.
Mm, yeah. I love what you're talking about right now. Like this is, I'm like, this is in my moment, you know? I'm like, this, I found another lady like me.
<Woo-hoo>!
You know?
We are soul
like,
sisters.
Yes, I'm like, okay, I'm not the only one out in the world like speaking this because it is so difficult, mm-hmm. you know?
It's
so difficult. And I think I come from a sense of I've seen people be vulnerable and I've seen the connections and support that have come from it, but we have to bring that safety. Like
Absolutely.
You said, you have to bring that safety. You have to bring the present moment to it to say, it's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. Like,
because everybody that's experienced trauma has experienced this side of the vulnerability. So when you start talking vulnerability and that bullshit, they're like, oh wait, no, 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 sister, this is what's going to happen. We teach them. Yep. That has happened before. However, comma, this is the beauty of it.
Mm-hmm.
This part is where you're going to thrive. You're going to survive. You're going to thrive and you're going to heal. Mm-hmm. And that won't even be a connection anymore. But that's what trauma does, is causes. It's from a vulnerability. And that's where their brain is like, yeah, their limbic system is like, oh, I'm not going there again.
Right.
So which goes right back to, you got to be connected to that person mm-hmm. that you're trying to treat.
Yeah.
Because if you're not, they're going to go, no, thank you.
Right.
And that's when you don't see them for a while. And their significant other says, get your ass back. Go back to where you were, because the significant sees something happening. Now, with that being said, it's very important to also treat the significance, because they have their own level of secondary trauma based on their significant, mm-hmm. right? And all the trauma that they come home. We call that bleeding on those who don't cut us.
Oh. How often do we do that?
Every day. Especially if we have untreated trauma. And the bleeding can be just a little tiny cut, or it can be just a full gush.
Mm-hmm. Do you see that give me maybe an example of like how we can see that within the public, maybe even somebody that we don't know, like with their behaviors of them bleeding onto us.
So we can say we go out with a couple couples. So there's three couples that go out and we notice that there's an unhealthy negative behavior happening between a couple, a wife to her husband. Let's just use that because it's very stereotypical to go, oh, the husband, wife.
Right.
No, let's do the other because we see a lot. So the wife is just being very inappropriate. We know that she's had some other trauma outside of her marriage that has nothing to do with that. Maybe childhood stuff, but it's her husband or her children that continue to take the brunt of it. That they're, it's just really yucky stuff. That's what we call, she's bleeding on someone who didn't cut her. Mm-hmm.
Maybe give us some behaviors of what you mean when you say inappropriate.
That's a whole gamut. Behaviors, inappropriate, yelling, screaming, honestly, domestic violence. We see that more and more. And it can be as simple as pushing. It can be as somebody as hitting, just really negative stuff where we're like, oh, most of the people like, if they're not punching them, it's not domestic violence. It's so domestic violence. But just some yelling, screaming, degrading, calling names, you know, dehumanizing. We do it. People do it every day in public. Yeah. That's one of those things that as a community, when it happens, we just turn away. We don't want to see it. Because if we do, we have to step in and take care of it. Yeah. Me, however, I'm right in the middle of it. I'm like, okay, let's talk about this.
But right. Anyway, yeah. Right. And I think that also has, and maybe this also comes down to the burnout. When they don't know what to do with burnout,
then
can lead now into the suicide.
Yes. Yes. So suicide and burnout, I mean, yes, they're very connected. However, suicide's a whole level because it's happening with individuals that even their systems don't even see it coming. It's such a depression, anxiety, loneliness, isolation, helplessness coming from deep in their soul.
Mm. Yeah, that is. It resonates with what you said about the inner world of the corporate, right?
Yes.
When there is that inner world, like your inner world is your soul. And I think I had actually made this post on LinkedIn the other day that said, you may not be killing yourself or you may not want to kill yourself, but you're killing your soul.
Absolutely. We see it in first responders too, a lot. We see it in high school kids, a lot. We see it in single parents, a lot.
How do you help them? Because a lot of the things that you're talking about with burnout, the tasks, I'm going to say, mm-hmm. the how-tos, how can those also maybe relate to these suicidal individuals?
So I think it can go back to the core of taking care of yourself, because people that take their life or have attempted, because there's so many attempts that mm-hmm. aren't completed, and so they fall in this, some of that same arena, is see where the, what mental, what trauma are you not taking care of? What is that little seed? So I always look at it like I get a little sore, I get a little scratch on my hand and there's a little piece of dirt in it and it scabs over, right? Looks fine. It looks totally fine. It's there. Nobody would know. And then one day it just starts to fester. Maybe turns a little white, a little bit green, and I just kind of brush it off and it'll go away. But it doesn't ever stop until what? Until I get in and clean that piece of dirt out. Mm-hmm. And it might be of a scar, but it's going to be a healthy scar. Because I survived it. I cleaned it up. I took care of what I needed to. We don't take care of our trauma. We need to get in there. We need to take care of it. We need to clean that little piece of dirt out, wherever it is in our body. Because our body does keep every single day of our life, good, bad, and indifferent.
Yeah. And I want you to maybe, especially being a trauma therapist, and this is the realm over all humans,
mm-hmm.
explain to us a little bit in your clinical aspect of what a trauma can be.
Oh,
I know so many people are like, oh, well, mine's not as bad as theirs. And so it doesn't matter.
Perfect. That's a great question. So I describe to have a traumatic event. Okay. It can look so different. It doesn't have to be a world, global, anything. It doesn't have to be your house burning down. It could be simple as you and I walking outside. We walk outside and we see a car wreck. And I go, oh, it's a car wreck. Gosh, I hope everybody's okay. And I go about my day. And you go, oh, it's a car wreck. And you might start to experience maybe a little eating issue, maybe some dreams, maybe not wanting to cross the road and not realizing you've just experienced a traumatic event. It's how our eyes and our senses react to what we see. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's the same, you and I see the same thing, But your body, your soul, your mindset looked at it different.
Because of all your past life.
Or just because of where you are, just how it resonated in your eyes. Your eyes, our eyes are the gateway to our soul, right? Mm. How your eyes, what you heard, what you smelled, what you could have felt in that moment. And I'm like, oh, I saw it. And then I kept going. For whatever reason, my eyes didn't pick up on that. Mm. Same thing in a family system. We can have a domestic issue, right? One of the kids, they're all going to be affected. And the levels of that trauma are so different on how their eyes seen it. You can have five kids raised in a home. Nothing happened. Everything was the same. And when those five kids are raised, potentially some of those kids are going to go, oh, this was traumatic for me. This really bothered me. Whatever reason, their eyes saw it different. Same thing in community events. Same thing in, you know, two women can have a fight. One can go, oh, this was very traumatic for me. One can go, well, okay, I'm going to dust off and go. Mm-hmm. It's just how our eyes and our ears and our senses pick up on any event. And it is trauma. And you're right. People minimize it every day. Oh, it's not that bad. Oh, it's not. Oh, look, I was raised. I'm a successful adult. But they don't realize that what they watched as a child affects how they parent.
Yes.
And that inner stuff, and that little piece of dirt that's still in that wound that needs to be cleaned out, because their life could be so much better.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, with trauma also, we talk about, and even just life, is we talk about how we process things. What does that actually mean on a clinical side?
Oh, gosh. That in itself is a very large gamut. How we process it means, do we talk about it? Do we talk about it with a therapist? Do we talk about it with a friend? Do we talk to ourselves about it? Do we write? I love journaling. I always encourage people, write, because when my eyes see what I'm writing down, I've just processed. And a lot of times in our brain, when we have a traumatic event, like our eyes see something, we have something that it doesn't process through. The rest of the memories go through back into our brain. They settle. They're fine until we recall them. But traumatic events get stuck, and they're stuck there. And they just kind of like keep beating on that spot to be able to go back and just settle, but they don't. With processing, whether it's verbal processing, hearing, talking, writing, whatever that looks like, we allow and we soften up that veil, per se, for those memories to go back in and take care of it and be where they're supposed to be.
Yeah. What about people that say, like, oh, I processed it, but you can still sense that, like, they haven't maybe fully processed it? They're saying that. They're mm-hmm. saying, I think, because they're trying to minimize what is occurring, but their behaviors and their reactions, and they're still bleeding on other people.
Yes. So I call that lack of acceptance. Because I can say, I processed it. I saw the trauma. I went to my trauma therapist. I did the reprocessing. I did all that stuff. And it's good. But I'm still going to have what I call dry drunk behaviors and lack of acceptance. I'm not going to accept the fact that it's done. I'm not going to accept the fact of whatever I still have unfinished. Maybe I haven't given, I haven't let go of something. Maybe I haven't forgiven somebody. Maybe somebody hasn't forgiven me. Maybe, I mean, there's so many different things in that arena, but there's definitely, and I totally get what you're talking about. And I call it just a lack of acceptance. I haven't accepted where I'm at yet. I say I processed it. Definitely different, right? My behaviors don't tell anything different. Same thing when we have what I call a dry drunk.
Yeah.
Still the same behaviors of an addict, but I'm just not putting that substance in my body. I still have the negative outrages. I still have the this and that and the other. I'm still socially struggling. I'm still all that stuff, but I'm just not intaking that substance.
Wow. I've never heard that, but that I already like it, my mind's like, oh my gosh, how many other people, right? I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
Am I doing that? That also brings me to the point of like that self-awareness,
mm-hmm.
right? I think the acceptance and self-awareness are so key in these moments.
Exactly. And then that's when the next step happens. That's when the final step happens, is when we become truly self-aware, because we don't always want to see our negative behaviors, right? When we become self-aware, the rest of the doors open, right? We start to have new relationships that we didn't have because, well, we're not being a bitch, or we're not, you know, whatever, right?
Yeah.
We're not being that negative person. We've processed it. We've decided we better accept it because it's not going to change. But now I need to look inside. Now I need to be self-aware. Hey, wait a minute. Maybe I do need to change my behavior. Maybe it's okay to say hi to Sammy down the street when I've not said anything because I've just been in this yucky funk.
Yeah. I love that because so many times, you know, people are like, oh, well, I don't want to, you know, reach out to them or talk to them because they haven't answered my last five phone calls, you know, and that I think comes also back to that, like, well, if you're just giving it, if you're just giving your time to them, if you're just giving them your presence, then like, you don't have to expect a phone call back.
Right. Exactly.
And you can still reach out to them.
Exactly. If I'm being authentic and real with myself and I've cleaned out all my stuff and I've gone through my own steps, why should I not reach out to them? If it's a true relationship that I want, then it's on me. If it's really not that important to me, then it's no big deal. But if it's something that I want, why would I get stuck back here at these other steps? Right? Just reach out because it's that relationship that I'm craving, that I'm wanting, not the other crap. Right? And then the other person then gets the opportunity, the choice to say, I want a relationship or I don't. Cool. I have at least known that I've gone through all my steps and I've authentically reached out. Then it's on them.
Yeah. And I think you're talking about that craving of connection.
Absolutely.
Right? That you already had a connection with them. You already feel the special spot with them. And that's what you're craving again.
Well, that's our flesh too. Regardless of whether it's a spiritual, if it's a not, regardless of anybody's belief, we are created, whether it's the Big Bang or from God or whoever, to want people to be connected. We are not created to be alone.
Right. Period. And that's, you know, coming back to our phones, it's what social media, it's what society has already done, right? I'm going to talk about it. COVID did that to us.
Yeah, 100%.
Isolated 100%. Us. 100%. Drive us apart. There's so much. Oh, if you're different than me, then I can't be, like that's a whole nother whole
episode. I do though. I do want to go back and I want to say something because I said we're created to be together. Sometimes we need to be alone to do some of our processing and do some of our work. Right.
Yes.
And so I don't want any of the listeners to think, oh, I can never be alone because that can cause all kinds of other problems. So I do want them to understand in the context that we are made to crave and to want to be connected.
Yeah. And I think connection doesn't always have to be that you are physically in the same room with that person.
Yes. Yes.
It is that intentionality of, you know, I have people, I am connected to people, I have your tribe and you're building your tribe. But like you said, you don't, like every waking moment, you do not have to be with somebody.
That's right.
You don't always have to be texting somebody or in, you know, conversation with somebody. Like that alone time is good to reflect, and that's where you get to get vulnerable with yourself. You're 100%. Like, all right, girl, what's going on?
And the healing that happens can be remarkable. Yeah. You know, we have to look at it, every one of us, every day, is our glass half full or is it half empty? And that's where it's at.
Yeah, that energy, right? Do I have energy to give? Do I need energy? Do I need to take a bath, or do I need to go to do yoga, or, you know, whatever it is? Like, how do I need to replenish myself?
Yes. And can I use my own voice? Because so many of us don't have a voice. We think we do, but we really don't.
Yeah. Explain a little bit more on that.
So when we, which part it goes into this, think about the corporate. So let's go to the corporate. You think that the individuals there, they have a lot of power. They have a lot of people underneath them. But do they really have a voice? And is their voice really coming from them, or are they saying what somebody else wants to hear? Look at the first responder level as well. Am I saying what I'm supposed to be expected to say, or is it really what I truly think or feel? That's a human thing. Take it down to the trafficking victims. They never have a voice, right? People in couples. One usually doesn't have a voice. If they're true with each other and they're honest about their relationship, many times one of them doesn't have a voice. And it's very important to get a voice.
How do you empower people to get in a voice?
Well, we could talk about this all day. So with the victims, I am their voice until they learn to do a voice. And please watch that thing because you'll see that their voice. First responders, we just talk to them, you know, what do you want? First, they have to identify what they want, even on a corporate level. Mm-hmm. If I can't even identify what I want because I have been forced to say, read a script, forced to talk a language to somebody else, I'm not going to even know. So let's find out who we are and what we really want. And then, now, is there times to not use that voice? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. There's times and then there's not so good at times. We, as humans, right, we can figure that out. Yeah. But we need to know that we have that option.
Yeah.
It's very important to our own mental health to know that we have that option to use our voice.
Yeah. And I love what you said too about sometimes we don't even know what we want.
That's right. That's right.
And I think that's that like self exploration, mm-hmm. that self time alone, the self care, like that's where you get to decide. And I've been in this realm a lot lately where it's like, what do I want? Where do I actually want to go? That is something I do have control over. Mm-hmm. I do get to steer my life. I do get to be the driver. But where am I going?
Right.
What's the mission? Where are my beliefs coming from? Where are my core values coming from,
Absolutely.
Right?
And if you don't know, and if you can't figure that out, and you can't figure out how to get to your own core, your own voice, look at how that builds up to the burnout, to eventual mm-hmm. burnout. Because I'm doing exactly what somebody else needs me to do. I'm saying exactly what I need to do to stay in this position, right? And then the next step is, I'm pretty lonely. I'm really getting depressed. I'm really, some things are really piling up. And then it's like, oh my gosh, my plates are starting to fall. Mm. Right? And I can't even use my voice to say, my plates are falling. Yeah. I'm just trying to catch them as they go, and they're still crumbling around me, and I still don't have a voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's, I mean, maybe me, but do you think it's also the lack of confidence of asking for help?
Oh, 100%. Stigma, weakness, all those vulnerabilities, all those things that have a negative connotation to them. Absolutely.
Yeah. I have just enjoyed our time together, and I'm so excited that we got connected.
Yay,
you know how
you.
We did, and
yes.
and I know there will be lots of, you know, different events and things that I want to participate with you. Before we wrap up, is there anything else that you want to be able to tell the listeners today?
No, just yes, actually I do. Please be aware. Look inside, just learn to be present for a second. If you're struggling out there with where you're at in the world or what you're thinking, just sit and be, and please reach out to somebody.
Yeah.
Please reach out. There's somebody wanting to talk. I'd love to talk to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I do actually, I want you to give a little pitch about what your kind of new angle is going to be
yes.
as well.
So we have started a new venture. Anybody that knows me knows that I'm a venturer. We are starting business retreats. We are doing self-care retreats. There's three of us trauma therapists, and we're ready in the world to have some fun with some individuals struggling with burnout, struggling with many different things. We have one coming up in McCall in November, and we have a couples retreat coming up in February in Sedona, Arizona.
Wow, how exciting.
So we'll get you all those details. But
yes,
it's an amazing thing. Again, teaching self-care. Come back to the table as professionals and let us help you learn how to take care of yourself and how to take care of others around you.
And find that voice so that
Absolutely.
You're not getting burnt out. I love it.
Yes.
I love it. Well, listeners, I will have all of her contact information in the description below. Please reach out to her. Please reach out to me. I'm also going to pitch, if you are a first responder looking for that safe place to talk about the things, help process, I'm not a counselor. I am not a therapist, but I am stepping into the realm of coaching. I've experienced it. I have been out in the field, and it is really my journey to be able to help you find your voice as well. So please get all of the information in the show notes. Thank you for listening, and I will talk to you guys again. Bye, guys. Thank you again for listening to another episode of Raw Thoughts Podcast. I'd appreciate it if you could follow, like, subscribe, and share with anybody that you think would be interested in this. You can also head over to my website at rawthoughtspodcast.com and see any other guests that have been on the episodes. You could also go over to Instagram and follow at rawthoughts.podcast. I would really appreciate it, and always send me a message if you're interested in being a guest or any feedback.